You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. And today I want to cover the speech that President Trump made at the World Economic Forum. I'm going to play the speech and add my commentary or reaction to it. I think it was an important speech because you need to understand who are the people going there. The biggest corporations, your multinational corporations that have operations worldwide, many of them based in Europe, though, their chief executive officers are fairly regular attendees at the World Economic Forum. And President Trump had, I believe, both lunch and dinner with several of them. And it's important that he got a terrific reception that really surprised our big lie media. My God, they're treating him like he's a star. Well, he is. Why? He's the United States, to the extent the United States economy is growing at a 3 or 4% rate, and I think it will grow at that rate this year, that has ripple effects, multiplier effects throughout the world, especially in Europe. So the United States will become a key place for multinationals to now invest in the United States because of the reduction in taxes on corporations and most importantly, cutting and eliminating many, many regulations. So he was well received, and other nations need to pay attention. Because to the extent that their tax system has a higher burden of taxes as well as more regulation, I'm thinking about the European Union, it makes them less competitive and not the best place to locate a plant. Now, many, many years ago, I started investigating the role of multinational corporations. And I'm talking the 60s and 70s. And at that time, there was heavy investment in Europe. Now it's around the world. And what happens is your corporations, while they might originate in a country like the United States or Europe, they will put plant and equipment near their markets. They have a choice. They can either export goods, and many choose that. But at some point, when they go multinational and are located in more than one place, what they're doing is try to cut costs because they have to compete with people, entities, enterprises, firms in whatever country they're going to locate the plant. And to the extent that at least then it was very, very favorable to invest in Europe. Now, what's happened is over the years, the U.S. corporations have been very successful, accumulated a lot of profits, and up until very recently did not return those profits to the United States because they would be hit with a large tax. Well, they still would be hit with a tax, but it's significantly less. And it's estimated upwards of $5 trillion, that's $5,000 billion, of profits are sitting offshore in various corporations, U.S. corporations. Doesn't mean they're going to send all that money back, but they will send a big chunk of it back. And that means that U.S. corporations have to decide what to do with the money. They've already indicated that a lot will go to bonuses for employees, as well as an expansion of their operations, investment in the United States. All that is good for the United States economy. And the U.S. economy has grown significantly better this year than 2016, roughly 2016 around 1.5%, a little over 1.5%. Now it's above 2%, about 2.35. So it looks like that 2018 might even be better, because remember in 2017, there was anticipation of the tax cut once President Trump won and was inaugurated. Although in several months, several weeks for sure, that it didn't look likely it could pass. Well, it did pass. And when you combine that with the cuts in regulations, eliminating a lot of regulations, it's really, you see the results in the stock market going up, oh, over 40%. Depends on what index you want to use. But that's significant. That's amazing. I think it's a little bit overpriced. There's going to be a correction. But the key thing is, what is it going to do to the U.S. economy? And what does that mean in terms of employment? I think the employment rates should go further down. I think it's not, it's going to take time, but eventually get under 3%. And as that happens, what else is going to go up? Labor participation rate of the American people will go up and really go back to where it normally was, both in the Clinton and Bush years, in the 66% to 67%. Not hovering around 63%, either below or slightly above that. So that's the 2018 optimistic scenario, and I think we're well on our way to seeing that happen. What I want to do is play President Trump's address, and I think this is a lot of what he's saying today. I think you're going to hear again next Tuesday when President Trump delivers his first State of the Union message, which I probably won't get to until the Wednesday show, because usually it's in the evening that they present it. Here, without further ado, here is President Trump at the World Economic Forum.
Thank you, Klaus, very much. It's a privilege to be here at this forum where leaders in business, science, art, diplomacy, and world affairs have gathered for many, many years to discuss how we can advance prosperity, security, and peace. I'm here today to represent the interests of the American people and to affirm America's friendship and partnership in building a better world. Like all nations represented at this great forum, America hopes for a future in which everyone can prosper and every child can grow up free from violence, poverty, and fear. Over the past year, we have made extraordinary strides in the U.S. We're lifting up forgotten communities, creating exciting new opportunities, and helping every American find their path to the American dream, the dream of a great job, a safe home, and a better life for their children. After years of stagnation, the United States is once again experiencing strong economic growth. The stock market is smashing one record after another and has added more than $7 trillion in new wealth since my election. Consumer confidence, business confidence, and manufacturing confidence are the highest they have been in many decades. Since my election, we've created 2.4 million jobs, and that number is going up.
Now I want to comment about that number. That's good, but it's not great. You need, if you were growing at 3.5%, you would be creating about 300,000 non-farm payroll jobs a month, and maybe even higher. And if you were, and you can do the math, at 300,000 a month, if that pace and growth continues over 12 months, is 3,600,000. So again, we're still operating and growing at about two-thirds of what the historical trend or average is. The United States economy over many decades, and it depends when you start and when you end, has been growing between 3 and 3.5%. And that's where you should be, especially when you're coming out of a recession. Ultimately, though, you should grow above that and be at 4, 5, 6%. It might surprise you, but the fastest growing two decades in terms of the United States economic growth was the 1870s and 1880s, where we grew at roughly 3.6%. We're going in the right direction. We're certainly not there. It's not a boom yet. And I caution you, you got to keep that in mind. Donald Trump is implementing And Congress is passing the laws that can implement an economic policy that encourages, provides incentives for people to start new businesses. And that's where about two-thirds of the jobs come from. It's entrepreneurs starting new businesses, risking their money, their time, and they hire people. And that is where it's the small businesses, not necessarily the large businesses, where you're going to see the job creation. And that requires strong economic incentives, where the incentive is you keep as much of the money that you earn, and you're not tied down by government regulation after government regulation. It takes time. There's a lag between the time of starting or implementing a policy and when you see the fruits of that policy, and I think it will take about a two-year period. But during that two-year period, you should see gradually increasing the quarterly real GDP numbers, and you need to consistently be over 3%, and then you should see a further decline in unemployment rates, as well as an increase, which we really need, in the labor participation rate, because there are anywhere between 20 and 30 million Americans that would go back into the labor force, especially if you have a booming economy and the jobs are there. Now, let me get back to President Trump.
Very, very substantially. Small business optimism is at an all-time high. New unemployment claims are near the lowest we've seen in almost half a century. African American unemployment has reached the lowest rate ever recorded in the United States, and so has unemployment among Hispanic Americans. The world is witnessing the resurgence of a strong and prosperous America. I'm here to deliver a simple message. There has never been a better time to hire, to build, to invest, and to grow in the United States. America is open for business, and we are competitive once again. The American economy is by far the largest in the world, and we've just enacted the most significant tax cuts and reform in American history. We've massively cut taxes for the middle class and small businesses to let working families keep more of their hard-earned money. We lowered our corporate tax rate from 35% all the way down to 21%. As a result, millions of workers have received tax cut bonuses from their employers in amounts as large as $3,000. The tax cut bill is expected to raise the average American's household income by more than $4,000. The world's largest company, Apple, announced it plans to bring $245 billion in overseas profits home to America. Their total investment into the United States economy will be more than $350 billion over the next 5 years. Now is the perfect time to bring your business, your jobs, and your investments to the United States. This is especially true because we have undertaken the most extensive regulatory reduction ever conceived. Regulation is stealth taxation. The U.S., like many other countries, unelected bureaucrats, and we have, believe me, we have them all over the place, and they've imposed crushing and anti-business and anti-worker regulations on our citizens with no vote, no legislative debate, and no real accountability.
Let me tell you why this message is going to resonate in this audience, especially amongst the corporate executives that are there. Contrast what the Trump administration is doing, namely cutting taxes and regulation, and looking at the situation in the European Union, where you do have a massive bureaucracy, I think even greater than the United States, and they are overregulating everything. So if you're a European business, you know that the United States is a much friendlier country to invest in. And they have money that they will invest in the United States, and that means jobs for millions of Americans. Now, the only concern is, how long will this continue? And what I mean, it's called regime certainty. If this works, and I think it will work, I have no doubts it will work. I think it could just be improved on. Again, I'm not going to belabor the point, but President Trump and Congress could have done much better in the tax area than they did. I'm not complaining. I think he's going in the right direction. They did the right thing, but they didn't go to a broad-based consumption tax and get rid of the legacy of the income tax. What's interesting is the two things that, in many respects, had a long-term and, I think, a disastrous impact on this country happened in 1913, when the income tax amendment was finally ratified, and that gave us the income tax, and it also gave us the central bank, the Federal Reserve System. And that was the leading edge, the start of interventionism by the government into the U.S. economy. The income tax provided the money that the government used, and they would say, used wisely, no, government spending started to really pick up then, starting in World War I and the other wars we've had, but also during the Hoover administration and the Roosevelt administration, where prior to that, governments, other than when we were not in war, the federal government was less than 3%. Now today, it's 18, 19%. Hopefully, the share of the government in the economy should go down. And I'm talking not only the federal government, but also county and state. Why the federal government needs to shrink, and that I think is the Achilles heel of this administration. They need to drastically cut federal spending in addition to the cuts in taxes. And you don't hear much about that because we still have massively large, huge and out of control government spending.
In America, those days are over. I pledged to eliminate two unnecessary regulations for every one new regulation. We have succeeded beyond our highest expectations. Instead of two for one, we have cut 22 burdensome regulations for every one new rule. We are freeing our businesses and workers so they can thrive and flourish as never before. We are creating an environment that attracts capital, invites investment, and rewards production. America is the place to do business. So come to America, where you can innovate, create, and build. I believe in America. As President of the United States, I will always put America first, just like the leaders of other countries should put their country first also. But America first does not mean America alone.
Now, this is key. Now, I'm a big free trader, but I, to a certain extent, go along with Trump. It needs to be fair trade, and I agree with Trump that you need bilateral agreements with other nations. So when either nation, the United States or whoever they enter in a bilateral agreement, cheats on the agreement, you can resolve it between countries. The problem with multilateral agreements, it simply takes way too long to litigate it and doesn't mean you're going to win it. Trade, free trade is what you want, but to make sure that the people and a nation are not taken advantage of, you need to have fair trade. And I'm all for the direction that Trump is going. Now, I'm the only thing that concerns me, sometimes he does sound very much like a protectionist. That's not the way to go.
When the United States grows, so does the world. American prosperity has created countless jobs all around the globe, and the drive for excellence, creativity, and innovation in the U.S. has led to important discoveries that help people everywhere live more prosperous and far healthier lives. As the United States pursues domestic reforms to unleash jobs and growth, we are also working to reform the international trading system so that it promotes broadly shared prosperity and rewards to those who play by the rules. We cannot have free and open trade if some countries exploit the system at the expense of others. We support free trade, but it needs to be fair and it needs to be reciprocal, because in the end, unfair trade undermines us all. The United States will no longer turn a blind eye to unfair economic practices, including massive intellectual property theft, industrial subsidies, and pervasive state-led economic planning. These and other predatory behaviors are distorting the global markets and harming businesses and workers, not just in the U.S., but around the globe. Just like we expect the leaders of other countries to protect their interests, as President of the United States, I will always protect the interests of our country, our companies, and our workers. We will enforce our trade laws and restore integrity to our trading system. Only by insisting on fair and reciprocal trade can we create a system that works not just for the U.S., but for all nations. As I have said, the United States is prepared to negotiate mutually beneficial bilateral trade agreements with all countries. This will include the countries in TPP, which are very important. We have agreements with several of them already. We would consider negotiating with the rest, either individually or perhaps as a group, if it is in the interests of all. My administration is also taking swift action in other ways to restore American confidence and independence. We are lifting self-imposed restrictions on energy production to provide affordable power to our citizens and businesses and to promote energy security for our friends all around the world. No country should be held hostage to a single provider of energy. America is roaring back, and now is the time to invest in the future of America. We have dramatically cut taxes to make America competitive. We are eliminating burdensome regulations at a record pace. We are reforming the bureaucracy to make it lean, responsive, and accountable, and we are ensuring our laws are enforced fairly. We have the best colleges and universities in the world, and we have the best workers in the world. Energy is abundant and affordable. There has never been a better time to do business in America. We are also making historic investments in the American military, because we cannot have prosperity without security. To make the world safer from rogue regimes, terrorism, and revisionist powers, we are asking our friends and allies to invest in their own defenses and to meet their financial obligations.
Now, this is important. The United States is the only superpower today, or hegemon. It spends about half, in terms of the production of weapon systems, arms, supplies, about half of the world's spending on that is done by the United States. What President Trump is emphasizing, and this is not new, it's about time that other nations that have prospered and really not spend anywhere near what they could and should do, pay their fair share. And I'm thinking about the European countries. Now, that's our major ally is NATO. But many of those countries, including Germany, France, could spend a lot more money on national defense. Instead, they spend it on other things. President Trump has put on notice that he's expecting these nations to increase their commitments and expenditures to defend their own country. Yes, the United States will manufacture many of the weapons they use, but it's up to them and their people to make the right choices. And that word has gone out to NATO, and slowly but surely, it should have been done years ago. They've been getting away with it for years. There are some exceptions, the United Kingdom, but most of the countries don't pay anywhere near. The commitment is 2% of their spending should be on defense. It's nowhere near that. So I'm glad he's reemphasizing this. Besides, the sort of the theme is peace, prosperity, security. And the security aspect has a lot of commitments in terms of the American people making the commitments through our Congress in a large national defense establishment. But it's well past time that other nations pay their fair share.
Our common security requires everyone to contribute their fair share. My administration is proud to have led historic efforts at the United Nations Security Council and all around the world to unite all civilized nations in our campaign of maximum pressure to denuke the Korean Peninsula. We continue to call on partners to confront Iran's support for terrorists and block Iran's path to a nuclear weapon. We're also working with allies and partners to destroy jihadist terrorist organizations such as ISIS, and very successfully so. The United States is leading a very broad coalition to deny terrorists control of their territory and populations, to cut off their funding, and to discredit their wicked ideology. I am pleased to report that the coalition to defeat ISIS has retaken almost 100% of the territory once held by these killers in Iraq and Syria. There is still more fighting and work to be done and to consolidate our gains. We are committed to ensuring that Afghanistan never again becomes a safe haven for terrorists who want to commit mass murder to our civilian populations. I want to thank those nations represented here today that have joined in these crucial efforts. You are not just securing your own citizens, but saving lives and restoring hope for millions and millions of people. When it comes to terrorism, we will do whatever is necessary to protect our nation. We will defend our citizens and our borders. We are also securing our immigration system as a matter of both national and economic security. America is a cutting-edge economy, but our immigration system is stuck in the past.
Now, amen to that. We do need a wall, even though it'll cost upwards of $25 billion, to stop the continuing invasion day after day of this country. Now, they don't all come over the U.S.-Mexican border, but about half or more do. The rest come here primarily legally on visas, whether it's a business visa, tourist visa, student visa, then overstay their visa. In other words, break their promises and do not return to whatever country they came from. So it needs to be a very much a two-pronged approach. You need to secure the borders, but you also need to make sure that those who visit or come to the United States to get educated or to do business leave the country as they agreed to. And that's why you need a system such as E-Verify to make sure that the people that are working here have a legal status to work here. The invasion of this country has been going on upwards of 20 years. I'm not saying it didn't happen prior to that, but in terms of the sheer magnitude, and I'm talking 2 to 3 million each year breaking into the country. Now, some of them go back, but at least 2/3 don't. What that means, when you add that up over a long period of time, you have anywhere between 30 and 60 million illegals in this country, of which probably 20 to 30 million, no one knows the exact number, are working here. And then you have their children that are being educated in our schools. Many of these illegals also get welfare and go to our emergency rooms. And this is costing the American people over $100 billion a year, which means a 25 billion-dollar wall would save a lot of money once it's up in place. But that's really just the first step. The second step is you need to deport those illegal aliens that are here. And that's going to take many, many years, I'd say 10 to 20 years, to really roll back the invasion of this country by the illegal aliens that are here. Now, we need and want and encourage legal immigration. But the American people are demanding that it not be a million plus a year, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 250,000 to 500,000, again, depending what is the labor market situation. If we're in a booming economy, we would probably allow 500,000. But if we ever go back into a recession where the unemployment rate is 6% or more, we should cut it back to the historical average of 250,000. These are laws that Congress is considering, and we need to address both legal immigration, limit it and control it, and make it merit-based. And I applaud President Trump and those in Congress, such as Tom Cotton, Senator from Arkansas, and David Perdue from Georgia, the lead sponsors of bringing control over our immigration process and fundamentally reform it by making it merit-based, not this family chain migration.
We must replace our current system of extended family chain migration with a merit-based system of admissions that selects new arrivals based on their ability to contribute to our economy, to support themselves financially, and to strengthen our country. In rebuilding America, we are also fully committed to developing our workforce. We are lifting people from dependence to independence, because we know the single best anti-poverty program is a very simple and very beautiful paycheck. To be successful, it is not enough to invest in our economy. We must invest in our people. When people are forgotten, the world becomes fractured. Only by hearing and responding to the voices of the forgotten can we create a bright future that is truly shared by all. The nation's greatness is more than the sum of its production. A nation's greatness is the sum of its citizens. The values, pride, love, devotion, and character of the people who call that nation home. From my first international G7 summit, to the G20, to the UN General Assembly, to APEC, to the World Trade Organization, and today at the World Economic Forum, my administration has not only been present, but has driven our message that we are all stronger when free, sovereign nations cooperate toward shared goals, and they cooperate toward shared dreams. Represented in this room are some of the remarkable citizens from all over the world. You are national leaders, business titans, industry giants, and many of the brightest minds in many fields. Each of you has the power to change hearts, transform lives, and shape your country's destinies. With this power comes an obligation, however, a duty of loyalty to the people, workers, and customers who have made you who you are. So together, let us resolve to use our power, our resources, and our voices, not just for ourselves, but for our people, to lift their burdens, to raise their hopes, and to empower their dreams, to protect their families, their communities, their histories, and their futures. That's what we're doing in America, and the results are totally unmistakable.
Now, so far, I think this is a very, very impressive speech. I wish all the American people could hear the entire speech, but it's not really being covered well, and that's a shame. But Donald Trump will repeat, I think, many of the points raised in this speech in his first State of the Union message, where probably 50 million or more of the American people will listen. And if the speech is anything like this one, he'll hit it out of the park. It'll be a grand slam. And the American people, again, will be optimistic that the American people and their dreams can be fulfilled, and will stop depending on government and marching along that road to serfdom, but get off that road towards one that leads to peace, prosperity, and security, but means a strong free enterprise market system where the government, why is important, is really a much smaller government.
It's why new businesses and investment are flooding in. It's why our unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in so many decades. It's why America's future has never been brighter. Today, I am inviting all of you to become part of this incredible future we are building together. Thank you to our hosts. Thank you to the leaders and innovators in the audience. But most importantly, thank you to all of the hardworking men and women who do their duty each and every day, making this a better world for everyone. Together, let us send our love and our gratitude to make them, because they really make our countries run. They make our countries great. Thank you, and God bless you all. Thank you very much.
Getting a standing ovation. It was about a 16-minute speech. Well done, Mr. President. Now, I want to switch gears, but before I do, I hope President Trump emphasize, and he should, probably will, most of the points made in this speech. The American people need to hear it. Now, when I've heard many of these points raised, because I've covered speeches that President Trump has given at various meetings, of whether it's in South Korea, China, or in the European countries. But it's time that that the American people hear President Trump, so it's important that you listen in, and I will go over in detail, just like I did this speech, President Trump's first State of the Union message, which will be given to Congress, joint session of the House and the Senate, as well as members of the Cabinet on next Tuesday. Now, I want to switch gears, because why Donald Trump, President Trump's State of the Union speech will be a lead story next week, and definitely on next Wednesday's show. There is a other story that the, again, big lie media, your major television networks, and your large city newspapers, those that are still in existence, because they are shrinking, and this has been going on for decades, and they have only themselves to blame. They're not really covering. If they're not covering the positive things that President Trump is doing, they're not at all covering what Congress is doing in terms of exposing what I consider the largest scandal in United States history, namely the administration of former President Barack Obama surveilling and spying on then-candidate Trump and subsequently then-President Trump, using as a basis a justification to get a warrant at the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. You need a warrant if you're going to spy on Americans. And they misled the court by using opposition research paid for by the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. What's even worse is this opposition research, what they got was a so-called dossier. It was really a they compiled or aggregated a number of reports from Russian agents paid for giving information, and this was fabricated, fictional, bought and paid for, scandalous information on Donald Trump, none of which our television networks, newspapers have been able to validate other than information that's in the public domain. Most of it is scandalous. It's make-believe. It's fiction. And this was used by the FBI, Department of Justice, to get a warrant so they could spy, so the Democratic Party and the Obama administration could spy on President or candidate Trump then and his campaign. This is the origins of the so-called Russian collusion. The result of this spying was they came up empty. They thought they were going to use this as an October surprise to eliminate any chances of then-candidate Trump winning. But they couldn't prove it. And they have no evidence of the Trump campaign or then-candidate Trump colluding with the Russians, and nor have they produced any with the so-called Mueller investigation. There was a plot by partisan members high up in the FBI to discredit Donald Trump. Fortunately, it failed miserably, and fortunately, candidate Trump won, because most of these people arrogantly thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win, that their actions would never see the light of day, would never be scrutinized. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the details, the glorious details, and they're not glorious, of this plot will be and is now being disclosed, and it will be further disclosed when Congress's House Intelligence Committee releases a four-page memo together with the documents supporting that memo that lay this out. Many people in the FBI should and will be fired, and many of them will face legal difficulties for their action. They betrayed their oath of office. They let their partisan feelings overrule the facts. They assume that President or then candidate Trump was dirty. And when they couldn't find the information after the election, they tried to delegitimize his election by saying he only won because he colluded with the Russians, when they had no evidence of it and still have no evidence of it. Accusing someone or alleging someone has engaged in a conspiracy with the Russians is far from proving it. It's hearsay. It's not allowed in courts. Courts require evidence, not your bias, not your lies, not your allegations. And many people, many of them high in the FBI and in the Justice Department, will be outed. Their names, many of the names are already revealed of who the plotters were. But this was a plot instigated by the Obama administration. They used the intelligence community to spy, surveil, and spy, wiretap Donald Trump and his campaign. That is a crime, using the government assets, the intelligence community, for political purposes, and that's exactly what was done, is a crime that many people should pay a price, including President Obama, his key advisors, as well as the names that we already have learned in the FBI and the Department of Justice. And they're coming out. They are coming out. Now, you'll be hearing more and more about this four-page memo. It's been in the news, at least on Fox News and some newspapers. Where you're not hearing the glorious detail are at the broadcast of your major networks together with the papers. But it's hard to ignore a scandal, because this is showing the corruption, the depth of corruption that's taken place. And it is a scandal of the first magnitude, and it's sweeping in its sheer magnitude. It needs to be brought out into the light of day, and probably next week, if not a little bit later, because a lot of this information is classified. It needs to be declassified. President Trump has indicated he wants this four-page memo released, but people in Congress that have read it also want many, not all, but many of those documents that support the conclusions reached in this memo to also be released. Now, I think it's not going to happen next week. It could. The memo release could happen. There's news reports that it will. They'll take a vote. But even if they take a vote, the president has 5 days to give his input. And he's not, or should be, advised not to include this in a State of Union message, other than maybe very, very briefly say that he's for transparency and that the American people should know what the former administration, together with the Democratic candidate for presidency, were trying to do. And that more and more details will be coming out. And I think most of this will, in glorious detail, come out around St. Valentine's Day. That's why I'm calling it the St. Valentine's Day Document and Memo Massacre, because the American people are not going to be happy, and that includes Democrats, for what this former administration did, both during the election campaign and after Donald Trump was elected president. They're not going to be happy. And many people that should have known better betrayed their oath of office, betrayed the American people, in an effort to hopefully guarantee that Hillary Clinton won. Well, she didn't win, thank God. And now many of the crimes of both Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, as well as the Obama administration, is going to be exposed. First in that memo, which is really the beginning. It's not the conclusion. This is at best a smoking gun, but there are many, many, many more documents to come out and many more names to come out, and we really have not heard them all. Both high up in the Obama administration, the National Security Advisor, the Director of Central Intelligence, the United Nations ambassador, as well as others that unmasked the names of American people so they could read, if you will, not only the mail, but the plans of the Trump campaign. This is a red line that has never been crossed, and President Obama did it, and he, together with his plotters, should be brought to justice. And they can start with Hillary Clinton, and I remind you that statute of limitations runs out the end of January. She left the State Department as Secretary of State 1 February, 5 years ago, on 2013. That runs out next week. Am I optimistic at all that they're going to indict her? They should indict her, because this investigation was not an investigation. They were covering up a fake, phony investigation where she got special treatment, and that should not happen. And the details are leaking out, but I want to see not only the memo, but the documents behind this. The American people are not going to be happy. And the Democratic Party is, let us say, in panic mode. They don't want you to know what the former Obama administration, the Democratic Party, was doing. And they were breaking the law repeatedly, spying on the American people, invading your privacy so they could elect Hillary Clinton president. And when she failed miserably to get elected, remember, Donald Trump needed only 270 electoral college votes. He got 304. So Donald Trump didn't have a landslide victory, but he certainly has a mandate. And both the FBI and the Justice Department need to be cleaned out. And these people need to be fired for dereliction of duty and really criminal behavior of the First Order. And I think that's going to happen. It's going to take time, though. It doesn't happen in a day, a week, or a month. But it does require, in my mind, a special prosecutor, what they call a special counsel, to investigate the FBI and the Department of Justice handling and misuse of the Foreign Intelligence Security Courts by misrepresenting the facts, the sources of this information, and to use Russian intelligence agents' lies about Donald Trump as a basis for spying on him. They never verified any of the information, but tried to mislead the court into thinking that they had, and this information was solid when it was anything but solid. And again, I'm talking about what I call the dirty dossier that Hillary Clinton's campaign, the Democratic National Committee, paid a law firm who in turn paid Fusion GPS, who hired a former British intelligence agent that had contacts in Russian intelligence, and he paid them for rumors, gossip, dirt is what they're looking for, and that dirt was consolidated or aggregated into a series of memos consolidated into what's called a dossier. It was nothing of the sort. It was fiction. It was fabricated. It's lies, fairy tales. And these fairy tales, fake fairy tales, were used to convince the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, to issue a warrant to enable the FBI and other elements of the intelligence agency to spy on President Trump and the Republican campaign, presidential campaign, to get him elected. This has never been done, should stop, and needs to be exposed and will be exposed. And the American people will be mad. I mean, really mad. This is beyond the pale. And the Democrat Party is trying to stop the release of the memo and the documents. Fortunately, they lost their minority. But this could change in 2018 if they should get a majority. They're trying to impeach Donald Trump. To do that, a key step is to get back control of Congress. Doesn't mean they're going to be successful, but that is their goal. And they're not going to get a conviction because that takes place in the Senate. But that is their plan. They're hiding their own crimes that they're accusing Trump of committing when he didn't. The criminals here are both government bureaucrats in the FBI, Department of Justice, as well as in the White House, up to and including the president. This needs to be fully aired. I agree with President Trump. We need transparency, and all the details should come out. The only exception, we should not in any way compromise sources and methods of gathering intelligence. But you see, that's what the Democrats are trying to use to say, well, we can't disclose this information. You see, ladies and gentlemen, they're profoundly embarrassed of what the Democratic Party did and its operatives working in the bureaucracy did that wanted Hillary Clinton to be the president. And I want to salute the efforts of Sean Hannity in laying this out together with others. The American people need to know to the extent to which the prior administration spied, surveilled the Republican candidate for President Donald Trump. It's a scandal of the first order, many times worse than Watergate. And the American people need to know about this, and the appropriate legal actions and steps need to happen, starting with the appointment of who? A special counsel that will investigate this and take it wherever it leads. And I think it leads ultimately to the Oval Office and President, former President Barack Obama. It also leads to Hillary Clinton, the phony fake investigation of the emails, and where they exonerated her before they investigated. Give me a break. And never impaneled a grand jury, nor did they gave immunity for many of the co-conspirators on her staff. This was malfeasance. Frankly, it's criminal behavior by people that are sworn and take an oath to the Constitution to preserve and protect the Constitution. They didn't do it. It's not only shameful, it's illegal, it's criminal. They should lose their jobs. They should lose their pension for engaging in this activity. How dare they? Well, they dare because they thought they could get away with it because they believed wrongly that the next president would be Hillary Clinton and she would make sure that this plot never saw the light of day. Well, fortunately, Hillary Clinton was not elected, and the Republicans, and I'm not a Republican, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a Democrat, nor am I a Republican, because both these parties are too big, and government spending is out of control, and it won't really fundamentally change until you have a new political party, a viable, successful party that will downsize the size, the scope, and the role of the federal government, not expand it in any way it can. So while Donald Trump is doing many of the right things, what he's not doing anything near enough is to get federal government spending under control, and ultimately that will do him in. Why the tax cuts and the elimination of regulations is well and good and is in the right direction, you can't continue having massive deficits, running deficits of 500, 600, 700 billion year in, year out, and going up, up, and up. You have to get federal government spending under control, and I'm simply not seeing it, and neither the Republican Party, the Democratic Party truly want that. So it's going to take a party that believes in limited government, believes in balanced budgets, to finally get under control what is clearly out of control. Not only is government spending out of control, but the bureaucracy is out of control when they are spying on you and me and they think they can get away with it. Well, they shouldn't get away with it, and hopefully they won't get away with it. Well, thank you for listening, and I'm sure more and more details will come out, both in terms of the President's State of the Union message, and I hope you listen to it. I certainly am going to go over it probably on our Wednesday program, as well as more and more breaking news as we learn who were the plotters that tried to get Trump both prior to the election as well as after, and came up empty. And their plot has been discovered, it's been exposed, and now they're going to pay the price of all plotters. Their heads should roll. They should be fired. They should be terminated with, let us say, no pensions, and then, where appropriate, criminally prosecuted. That will take a special counsel, because I simply do not trust the FBI or the Department of Justice in this matter. Their hands are dirty at the very highest level. This is not aimed at the rank and file agents of the FBI or attorneys, employees of the Department of Justice. It's their leadership that failed the American people, failed the president, and they should not be able to get away with it. And I don't think they will. And I hope soon a special counsel will be appointed. Monday would be nice. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.